Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Welcome to Cravings. This is Mark. You've got me screaming in the back. What's going on? What's going on? Unfortunately, Pete Dillon is very unwell today, so he won't be here. But I'm here, and I'm here with a special guest, and Cravings is going to go on like normal, and everything is going to be fine in the city of Melbourne. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. Once again, Pete Dillon will be back next week. He's just unfortunately got laryngitis, so he's not much good on a audio media. He's much better on TV. But we wish him all the best. But today on Cravings, we do have a very special guest, someone who is very familiar on the food scene in Melbourne, and certainly a rising star, and someone who's working at taking a leadership position in a one-hatted restaurant. I'm going to introduce Sasha. Welcome very much. Welcome very much. That's a new thing we say now here. Welcome to Cravings on Joy 94.9, Sasha.
Thank you for having me.
And let's talk about the restaurant that you're working with. So you can introduce it yourself.
I work at the Epoca restaurant in Rathdown Street in Carlton, just opposite the exhibition buildings, the old exhibition buildings. And I've been there for just over a year now.
Mm.
And it's been I've found my home.
You found your home. So let's a food career takes a bit longer than just rocking up at somewhere that's quite as renowned, yes, and as established as a pocket. So what was that first thing? What was the first egg you cracked? Where did you decide that food was going to be your career and your passion?
It wasn't a straightforward path. As I think most people say, it never ends up turning out the way you want. I actually left school and started a science degree, a Bachelor of Science, and was going to be part of the medical science community, and I got a kitchen hand job on the side while I was at university.
You've got to be really careful with that phrasing.
Kitchen hand?
Job.
Job.
Sorry, go on.
Sorry, that went straight over my head, concentrating.
So you, kitchen hand, okay. So you literally have worked your way up for the mailroom.
Yes.
Oh, so my classic story.
I started doing dishes just while I was at uni.
Yeah.
And then I just started taking on more responsibility, and I actually never thought of it as more than a part-time job. I was actually applied for that ambulance service, and I didn't have my full license then, so I wasn't able to be a candidate, and I got offered an apprenticeship at the place I was working, and I thought, why not give it a go? Food has always been part of my life, but I'd never thought of it until then as a career.
So how was it, what was your mental shift? Because science and food, I can see there's a lot of, because science is kitchen is all about applied heat, chemical reactions, changing the nature of things.
And it's surprising how much it now, you do tap into some of what you've learnt, the basic science, cooking is.
Mm.
So, yeah.
So take us through that. When you were offered an apprenticeship, would you just sit there and go, you guys nuts? Or were you going?
Everyone around me said, no, are you crazy?
Really?
No. Well, it's not glamorous by any stretch of the means, being in a commercial kitchen. Mm-hmm. It's hard work, long hours.
Yes, it is. Very hard
the
work.
The usual no social life, always having to compromise everything else apart from your work. And so everyone was like, no, what are you buying into? And it was nearly 20 years ago I started cooking, so it definitely didn't have the celebrity chef tag that is now associated with it.
Mm.
So you were, and same with trade school, everything else like that. It wasn't as, I suppose, as
glamorous as having a science degree and working in medical research.
Well, I suppose the biggest thing for me was I didn't like the solo being, having to work by myself and the isolation that would come with a lot of working in the medical science industry.
Mm.
A lot of it's lab-based. Well, that's the way the direction I was going. And I wanted to be part of a team, and I seemed to get that feeling when I was working part-time.
So what was the first step after the apprenticeship? What kind of kitchen were you in?
It was a gourmet take-home food place in the suburbs. And I just did that, and then I realised after I'd started trade school that I needed to get experience in an actual restaurant and not, I suppose, just cooking quiches and salads and things like that. I needed to get more a more professional training.
Mm-hmm.
So I then moved into the city and worked at an Italian restaurant and learnt the basics of Italian there, and then moved on to then working in a French restaurant and working with a French chef for a long period of time. And
are you going to name the chef? Is it someone?
Philippe Michel.
Oh, yes. So you've had very rigorous training. And
yes.
Yeah. So to your first Italian restaurant experience, what are those fundamental things about that kitchen, that cucina, that you carry with today? What were the things you learnt that are like that underpinning?
I was probably that you can just have a tasty dish just with simple ingredients and not so many elements on a plate.
Mm.
It can just be as satisfying as having a dish that's got 14 different elements on a plate.
Mm.
Simplicity.
It's the interesting juxtaposition between Italian and French food, isn't it? The glory of the simplicity to the glory of the complex.
Yes.
Mm. So an Italian kitchen, what do you, when you're at home, what have you taken from that first experience in a cucina?
It probably sounds bad, but learning those basics is that I can whip up something simple and fast and tasty without having to do it. Because generally I think most chefs or hospitality people, they're happy to have simple things at home, and we're probably very boring with what we eat at home.
Well, that's the fantastic thing about the Italian kitchen. It just lends itself to simple, amazing flavours, fresh tomatoes, some cheese and some basil and oil, salt and pepper, and you've got yourself one of the best salads
that
humanity has ever devised.
Yes.
And anyone can do it. Fascinating stuff. Have you got any questions for Sasha about her career in food and what it means to be a one-hatted chef, which we'll talk about a bit later on in the show? Let us know. You can SMS us on 0427 JOY949 or you can email us on air at joy.org.au.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Dan Churchill from MasterChef. You're listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Yes, you certainly are listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9. And thank you very much to Stevie Wonder for Once in My Life. What a great track. And Stevie Wonder, what a great artist. You're on, I was about to say Escape Pod, you're not. You're on Cravings. Pete Dillon is unwell today. We wish him all the very best and to get on the mend very quickly. We look forward to him being back on air and over his laryngitis. I'm Mark. I'm usually on Escape Pod, which I will be after
after this, but just filling in for Pete this week. And we have a fabulous young chef from Apoka, which is a one-hatted restaurant. Her name's Sasha Rundle. Welcome again to Craving. Sasha, we were talking before the break about the first couple of kitchens that you were working in, and that first Italian kitchen just brought you so much training ability and just that sensibility about throwing together some simple foods. What is a French kitchen taught you? What skills and what sensibility has that brought you?
It taught me, I would say, more technical skills and also finesse. That
what do you mean as a chef? Now, take it for granted that I am not. I'm not a Pete Dillon level foodie or a Joe Pryor level foodie. So when you're talking about technical skills, are you talking about timing, food combinations? What does that mean?
Technical skills, I would say, can range from being your knife skills, actually, and understanding the sense of touch when you touch different things when they're cooking, and also understanding combinations of flavours as well. That does take part of it. Yes, it does. But it's mainly technical skills, and also the finesse is hard to... I think the biggest thing I learnt was finesse, coming from going in a French kitchen. And
do you mean from the flavours or the presentation?
Presentation, all of those things. Finesse is just how you handle a product, whether it be from preparing it to plating it and presenting it.
Okay, so from a chef's point of view, those French skills, are they hard-fought-for skills? Are they things that you can easily learn, or do you get the chef throwing a lot of iron skillets at your head before you really get there?
No, I think that's... I don't think that exists so much exists anymore.
Only on telly?
Yeah, because it's good. It's good for TV. Of course, there is short fuses, but...
It's a high-pressure environment, right?
Yes. But, sorry, what was the question?
About those skills, how hard are they fought for? Because everybody considers themselves a foodie these days, and that's the problem with the general public. They go to Coles, they see something with Jamie Oliver's face in it, and they think they just throw the salmon in and then it's done.
Yes, especially with the French skills, because they're, I suppose, now considered old school. I think not many people learn those skills much anymore, especially now that you've got backpack things and all those type of convenience products.
Explain
and
it has, backpack.
Backpack is items cooked under pressure in a water bath at low temperatures, and it gives you a consistent result and tasty result with, I suppose, minimal intervention by the chef. You can put it set if you set the right temperature, you can put it in the bath, and I think that's taken over the years, especially in the last 10 to 15 years, has taken a lot of, I suppose, the skills that you learnt about touch and smell, of understanding how something cooks.
Do you think the younger generation of chefs coming up are going to lose some of the skill sets?
That is...
What do you think the danger is of that? Will we taken over by our robot masters?
I hope not. But, no, I believe that especially the chefs that have been cooking longer, I think we have to be mindful that we have to keep teaching the younger generation those skills that may not always be needed, but I think that everyone needs as a foundation.
Right. Interesting.
So, yeah. I think it's becoming a trend that it is being lost in some aspects.
So are there other skills coming in to take that place, or is it just a part of the art that's gone? Like old school film photography, it's just something that...
It's hard to say.
Yeah?
I suppose the way we're eating is completely different to 15 years ago, where it wasn't considered a dish unless you had some sort of sauce on the side, whereas now you can, with all the multiculturalism... You can have a dish that is just as tasty without just having the three veg and a meat, so to speak, and sauce on the plate. Yeah, so I think it's just changed.
Right. Fair enough. So now that you're at Apoka, was there another step between Apoka and being in a French kitchen that you want to talk about?
What did I... In between, I thought I didn't want to do nights anymore. So I tried to get, I worked for a year in a cafe.
Yeah.
And, but I missed the creative stimulation that you get with work doing dinner service, the creativity that, because people are much more set in their ways with what they'll eat for breakfast. Generally, everyone has their certain...
Smashed avocado with Persian feta, some dukkha on top, a squish of...
Oh, boom.
Now, having said that, that's one of my favourite dishes of all time. Put on a bit of bacon and a poached egg and...
Exactly. But people aren't very adventurous when at that time of the day.
No.
And so I missed that. Being able to be more creative, and that's why I chose to go back to dinner service.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. So now you're at a poker,
mm-hmm.
which is a pretty fancy pants venue. So
it's a beautiful building.
It's a beautiful building, and it recently got another hat.
Yeah, we've got one hat, but yes.
One hat? Yeah. Oh, sorry, yeah, I'm probably using the phrasing wrong. It's got a hat again.
Yes.
Talk about what a hat means to a place like a poker and you.
Well, a hat, I suppose, is just the industry recognition that you're offering good quality food and service
mm-hmm.
for a customer. And I suppose for some people it just helps when they read the guide. It helps distinguish the type of experience that they may have.
So that's setting expectations.
Exactly.
Right. Does that put a lot more pressure on you?
Yes, I think it does.
Is it good pressure or is it a complex
thing? It keeps you on your toes.
Right.
It keeps you on your toes.
Do you have ambitions for three hats? Is that something that you want to
no,
do? No,
because I.
Headache?
It goes again. You have so much pressure to maintain the three hats because it is such a high level of dining that it can be harder to be, I suppose, more spontaneous with the food. You have to be more controlled. In some ways, I believe creativity is got to be thought about more. You can't, in my experience, get the fish of the day that you might get from the fishmonger and make a dish that day and put it on the menu that night. There has to be a bit more careful planning involved to keep it at the standard that it needs to be.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So it is complex. I mean, it's from an outsider's point of view, and I certainly don't profess to be a wild foodie. I do appreciate food, and I eat it nearly every day. But when it comes to things like three hats, yeah, it's, I don't look for restaurants for hats, but many, many people do.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So a poker's got a very particular ambiance about it, as far as I can pick. It's fine dining, but it's also, there's an element of casualness about it. But it's also a place where lots of gay and lesbian people come to mark events. So,
yes,
that happen?
I think it's just, we're very welcoming. The building itself is very welcoming. You feel like when you walk in the door that you're walking into someone's home. And I think.
A fancy home.
Oh, yes, I suppose a fancy home, but we still try.
It's beautiful.
Have that feeling that you're actually, you may be going to a relative's home for a good meal and a celebration. And so that in turn means we have become quite popular with weddings, commitment ceremonies and celebrations.
Anniversaries and birthdays.
Oh, yes, anniversaries, birthdays.
Mm. I've got some fabulous questions that are coming in from a listener in Queensland whose name may be Joe Pryor, and I'm going to ask those questions shortly after a quick break. You're on Cravings with Mark. Pete Dillon is currently sick, but we're looking forward to having him back next week. And stick with us all afternoon on Joy 94.9.
I've missed my favourite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry, our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
Hi, I'm Heston Blumenthal. You're with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
That's right, you're on Cravings. Pete Dillon's away today. He's unwell, but I'm Mark, usually from Escape Pod, which is on next. But thank you very much for listening. And we've got some great questions that have come in. And I'm going to ask them for Sasha. Sasha's, is it the executive chef? What's what's your title?
Head chef.
Head chef at Apoka, which is a restaurant in Rathdown Street, Carlton. Favourite of the LGBTI community. We were just talking about people marking life occasions such as commitment ceremonies, anniversaries, birthdays and so forth. I've been there a number of times and it is a fantastic event space with a bar upstairs, and, mm-hmm. and we're not here to promote poker. We're here to support you as a head chef and what Sasha Rundle is doing. So when you're at the head chef of a place like a poker, which is a highly reputed, just a beautifully delivered dining experience, and it's one of those places that real foodies just, you know, it's one of the top places to go for people who care. That puts a lot of pressure on you coming up with a menu. You can't just go, nah, tonight's Jaffel night, I can't be bothered.
True.
How do you, what's the process? Walk through the Apoka process for Sasha Rundle.
For me, when I try and create new dishes, I suppose it starts off as a very spontaneous idea. Maybe one of the suppliers, I use quite a few direct from the farm suppliers. They might have something that sort of intrigues me, or they want me to try and use, and or I just basically look at what's in season and then work out a dish around it. So I get very I get a lot of inspiration, especially from vegetables and the like, to create.
How can
dishes.
A vegetable inspire you? What's that process? Because it, you know, I could walk through a market and go, they're nice, but I couldn't be inspired. But you're a chef. Is it the colour? Is it the fragrance?
I think it's all of those things. It's the colour, it's the fragrance, it's the texture, and how you can play with the texture and do different things.
Right.
And cooking different, using different cooking methods to be able to, I suppose, make that vegetable shine.
So you see a capsicum.
Yes.
And you see a world of possibility.
Yes.
Whereas I probably see a salad and a...
Yeah, no.
Something quite simple.
I suppose for me, whenever I write the menu, I suppose the bit I enjoy the most is using vegetables and following the seasons and being able to showcase, I suppose, whatever is in season.
So as a chef, you and for a poke in particular, you are you very much so vegetable-driven when you're looking at creating the menu?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah,
but it hasn't been a conscious thing. But I've just noticed, especially these days, you get a lot of people that they dine out quite often. They don't want to eat heavy food every night of the week, and they want to eat healthier as well because they are eating out more often, and vegetables do that, and it accommodates everyone's dietary requirements as well.
What kind of pressure do you put on yourself to deliver a vegetarian menu or strong vegetarian offers? And do you do vegan or...?
Yes, yeah. Always. We accommodate all dietary requirements. Mm. I suppose when I initially write something, I am thinking vegetarian
first.
It seems these days it's always easier to start thinking vegetarian first, and then you can build a dish from that.
Mm. And so then you look at the proteins afterwards.
Yes.
Do you think that the proteins, meat, fish... chicken, whatever, turkey, alligator, easier to work with? Or do you think that your passion is just vegetables?
I think it's just I have more fun with being able to create new dishes with vegetables. I suppose I enjoy cooking different proteins, but I suppose I have the most fun with creating dishes out of the season's vegetables.
Because you've got an interesting supplier list, don't you?
Yes.
You have a forager.
Yes. Oh,
so I suppose tell us about that.
I suppose you wouldn't like to... I suppose it's become very naff-like forager. But he is a friend that I've had for quite a few years now, and he works for Parks and Gardens. And he looks after areas in Melbourne that are still 90% plus indigenous, indigenous
plants.
And in doing so, he has to do the weed management in those areas. And a lot of those weeds are edible. And so as he's going through those areas to maintain them and conserve them, he brings us the edible weeds.
And is this something that you go, oh, great, stinging nettles, I can make soup?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, what's the craziest thing you've done with the craziest foraged item? Because this is fascinating.
I suppose this will make you laugh left, right and centre. There's a thing called a bunya nut.
Don't know it.
Yeah, it's from a native tree, mm-hmm. and it looks like an acorn, massive acorn, like really heavy, and then the nut is within the
shell?
Not the shell. Husk. Yeah, within the husk, because it looks like a pine cone, a massive pine cone. And you think you can get the flesh or what is, I suppose, classified as the nut of it and use it. And a lot of high-end restaurants all use the bunya nut. But that
what does it taste like? What's the...
For me, I got the taste when you eat it raw, sort of like a water chestnut. And then when you cook it, more like, I suppose, your European chestnut. It has that mealy richness that you get. It sounds like it wouldn't be delicious, but it can be.
So what would you use a bunga...
A bunya.
I was about to say bunga bunga, which is more like an Italian president, prime minister's party. A bunga bunga. What do you put with?
That was probably the wackiest thing that came in the door. Mick is the guy's name, and he rocked
Mad
up.
Mad props to you, Mick.
Yeah, he rocked up.
And your bunya nuts.
Yeah, in the back of his ute with these massive acorns. And I was like, he goes, here. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do with all these? So I ended up making a dessert out of it. But it's all about trying different things with it.
Now, I would have thought savoury. How did you make a dessert out of a bunya nut?
Bunya nut. I just played it. I tried it all different techniques with it and worked out what I thought would taste the nicest.
And it lent itself to sweetness?
Yes.
And to finish a meal?
Yes.
Okay. How do you pair wines with a bunya nut?
That's Angie's problem.
Handball.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yeah, no worries. I get it. So Melbourne's a very competitive food scene. For you to be looking at a menu from the vegetables up seems to be a unique approach to me. How many other head chefs are doing that? Are you unique in that respect?
To be quite honest, I don't know. I don't think so. But
are you being modest?
No, I honestly don't know, because I suppose it's something that when all our chefs get together, it's not something you often discuss about how you do your menu design or how you get there. It's just assumed that you just do it.
But you find a way.
Yeah,
I honestly don't know.
Everyone has different starting points or different ingredients or a different way of being creative.
Yeah, so seasonality is what inspires you, and then what Mick brings around from foraging inspires you. Is there anything in the proteins that inspires you, or is that really a sort of something that just follows along with the big idea?
I suppose it follows along with the big idea, but I suppose at the same time being conscious of where it comes from and how it's grown is becoming, I suppose, a more important question, because people do want to know the provenance of what they eat and how it's grown or fed. So, yeah, I think provenance, especially over the last 8 years, is people want to know more about where their food comes from.
Yeah.
As cliche as it sounds.
But people are also very much more educated about their food than they were 20 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's TV shows.
It is. We're going to have to get you one. You're on Joy 94.9. This is Cravings with Mark. I'm Pete Dillon's away, but he'll be back next week. We're currently talking to Sasha Rundle from Apoka about her career in food and about what she is currently doing in the One Hatter restaurant, Apoka. Stick with us all afternoon. After Cravings, we have Escape Pod, and then we've got a whole bunch of other things this afternoon. So we'll introduce you to everything that we've got. Stick with us all afternoon on Joy 94.9.
Is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hi, I'm Katrina Hyam, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, you're with Mark Adams. It's certainly Cravings, but Pete Dillon's away this week. We wish him speedy recovery and look forward to him being on the airways, talking certainly much more knowledgeably than I about food. But our guest today is Sasha Rundle, who's here from Apoka. And we've just been joined by Russ. Russ is my co-host from Escape Pod, the next show, but he's just been to Italy. We are going to talk, firstly, to you, Sasha. What's your favourite thing to eat when you go out?
if it's
a jaffle.
No, it's probably actually a good bowl of pasta.
Yeah,
it is. It just not nothing fancy, just good, a good pasta.
Wholesome, honest.
Mm-hmm. And no. or food that's just got clean flavours.
Right. Russ, you have just got off the plane literally yesterday from Italy. Talk to us about Italian food. Make us jealous.
Okay, I will, but don't expect much. The jet lurgy's set in.
Oh, okay.
And I've just slept for 16 hours, so I'm awake, but I'm not sure how awake I am. We had a great holiday. We went to Italy, Austria, Egypt, and Turkey. Mm-hmm. And Italian food is to absolutely die for. I couldn't believe it. The highlight of the trip was Napoli. I love Naples. It's one of Europe's poorest cities, so in the middle of all
and
of this...
graffiti strewn.
Oh, it is, absolutely. In the middle of all of this graffiti and rubbish is this amazing city with the most amazing people. And I tell you what, you have not had pizza until you've been to Naples. It is absolutely to die for. And they have about 50 or 60 different types of pizza, so I gladly tried every single one of them. and ooh la la, I tell you what, ice cream and gelato.
Mm.
I reckon I've put on about 10 kilos since I've been away, and I'm proud to say that because I had to get down to the ice cream shop every day when it opened and
scratching at the door.
Well, I have something called a mega ice cream, and I tell you what, it's almost a metre high, and it had about 12 different flavours of ice cream in it, and I just had to have one of those every day. It was awesome. It was absolutely fantastic.
So what kind of flavours were they doing?
Oh, there was blueberry, there was rum and raisin, there was, you name it.
Drawn from nature mostly? Or?
Absolutely, but you name it, they managed to pile these all on together, and I wish I could remember what they were, but I just sat at the counterpoint, I'll have that with that and that and that and that and slurped away. But the nice thing about Naples is it's very much you can stay right in the heart of the city, but you're right in the heart of the community. So we stayed in an Airbnb, which was right in the heart of town. But you just wander around all the back streets there, and all of a sudden you're in a family restaurant and you're eating with all the locals. And so you've got these family restaurants that have been there for 20, 30, 40 years, and you're eating all of these special dishes that, you know, mama's put together.
Are they on the menu, or is it like what Sasha does and find seasonal inspiration?
There is a menu, but it's very much whatever's in season there. But it's the Italians do it so well. You know, I couldn't get enough of their. I know this sounds very cliche, but the pastas, the pizza, and the ice cream was enough to keep me going. And there are so many different types of flavour. It was just to die for. Everything's so fresh. And tomato, I have never tasted tomato until you've been to Italy. I don't know what they do with them, but it's absolutely stunning. So I was running around with my Italian hat on and in fine form with all these gorgeous Italian waiters everywhere and trying to put on my al dente and my pregos and all of that sort of stuff. And it was just awesome. The Italians know how to do it, and they do it well. And they know how to cook, don't they?
Yes.
So, Sasha, when you were travelling, what was your favourite food experience?
It's actually, I was in Lyon in France, and it was in the old part of Lyon, and it was in a bistro, and it was a potato gratin.
Okay.
And I've sent people there when they've been travelling through. I said, you have to go to this bistro and just sit there and order the potato gratin. I think we came back like 3 days in a row just to keep having it.
Cheese did they use? Was it Gruyere, or were they using other kind?
I don't even think there was any cheese. I think it was just cream and potatoes, but I don't know what made it
and butter.
Different. Yes, probably. It was the butter, probably the butter.
it was a whole slag of lure pack in there.
It was delicious.
Salt is good for the arteries.
But it was delicious, and I don't know. It's, again, something so simple.
Yeah, exactly. Well, best food often is. You're mm-hmm. on Cravings. It's currently 2:08. The day is flying. We've got a whole lineup of wonderful shows on Joy 94.9. Stick with us all afternoon. It's Cravings with Mark. Pete Dillon's back next week, and we look forward to having him. But first, just a few messages from our sponsors.
Did you know Joy Audio Production Services can help you with your audio recording needs, no matter what the task at hand? We have a way to support you and your business. We can produce radio-style interviews for your website, on-hold greetings, podcasts, voiceovers for video, and more. Call Joy's production manager, Jason, on 1-300-569-949 or email production@joy.org.au. That's 1-300-569-949. Joy Audio Production Services, commercial grade audio quality at community radio rates.
You are on Joy 94.9. We have a huge afternoon coming up. Next is Escape Pod, so we're going to be talking to the wonderful people from Melbourne Walking Tours. We've got a fantastic interview coming up, so stick with us. And then we've got a whole bunch of stuff all afternoon and evening. We've got more music, we've got video games, we've got more music. We've got great music. It's the best place to be on a Saturday evening for music is Joy 94.9. So I want to say thank you very much to Sasha Randall from Apoka.
Thank you for having me.
What are your thoughts on what's happening with food trends in Melbourne or Victoria or globally? What do you think's coming up? What do you think the next big things are to look for?
I think I think we're going to go back to more traditional food.
Yeah.
And I think everyone is eating out more often and now they want more comfort food and things that remind them of food memories that they have had growing up. And I think that, I suppose, that's why a lot of people feel so comfortable at Epoca, because it is like that. When you walk in the doors, it's like going into someone's home.
So what are the things that you're focusing on at the moment that bring out that comfort?
It could be a dessert. Like we have a pasta wheel, yeah. So a big cheese wheel that we toss the pasta in front of the customer. But it's also... like it could be a dessert, like a rice pudding. It's not anything groundbreaking, but it makes people feel comfortable and relaxed.
You know, people are going to want to eat it, which sounds fantastic. I had a look on your website today, and I was instantly hungry. I took one look at all of the different dishes you've got on there, and I thought, right, I've never been. I've got to go. So
good.
You can expect to see me there next week.
Excellent.
Well, we were talking before about how popular Apoka is, particularly with the LGBTI community, and especially a lot of events and occasion dining. It's a wonderful place to celebrate because it's fine dining enough, but it's still that touch of casual that makes you feel so welcome and embraced, and that you can enjoy the meal without feeling like you're being judged by other diners.
What's your favourite dish?
I can't answer that. That's like
choosing your favourite dishes, then.
Uh-huh. It's like choosing your favourite child.
Everybody has a favourite child. Let's face it.
I don't know. That's a really hard one.
What are you proud of, then? What are you most proud of? What was the thing that, you know, really makes you go, yeah, that was good?
All right, if I came in today and I sat down and I said, bring out your best, what would you give me?
And you would probably give you carrot salad.
Oh, okay. All right. That's good for my diet at the moment.
Carrot salad. Yeah. Let's walk through that.
I suppose it started a few months ago, and it seems to people always seem to comment on it. It's become a running joke within the restaurant. I'm never going to be able to take this carrot salad off.
Yeah.
And it's just roasted, heirloom carrots. At the moment, it's just with almonds and mussels and a carrot juice vinaigrette, but everyone seems to go crazy for it.
Sounds so yummy.
Okay, yeah.
I really feel as
calling it a carrot salad is kind of underselling it. Sounds amazing. What's your number one thing that you think that you did a good job, but it just didn't shift off the menu? Did you ever have that experience, or does everything shift?
No, I would say... it would probably be offal, I still think, is an area that I think it will slowly become more embraced, but still people, there is trepidation with trying it. But generally, if you don't tell someone and they try it and they go,
that was nice.
Yeah. So I think...
it is a hard sell, offal.
Yes.
Yeah. From a chef's point of view, do you like working with it?
Yes, because it's completely different to your normal, say, chicken breast or duck breast or... leg of lamb, things like that, is completely different. So you can be more creative with it.
Mm. Okay. So when you go to a restaurant, we talked about your favourite fruit as pasta. What's the thing that annoys you when you go to a menu? Is there something that is just, oh, come on, guys, do you have to do that?
I'm one of those people that I'm very happy if I go to a restaurant and they offer some form of share menu where I don't have to think.
Okay, yeah.
They can, I suppose, just roll out the greatest hits off the menu and I don't have to think about it and I can just relax and enjoy the company.
Right.
And yep, that's really what eating's all about, though, when you think about it, isn't it? I mean, I love to go somewhere where you can get good food, but you're going there for a special occasion and you really are enjoying the company. So I think that's a great idea if you can go there and they roll out the best stuff and you can just enjoy the company.
So a degustation menu is a good idea for you.
Yeah, or a family style where everyone can partake together and it's not so formal.
Yeah, yeah. So places like dumpling places must be right up your alley with this. Yum cha.
Yeah. I suppose you get a greater selection, but just anywhere.
Mm. Okay. Thank you so much for joining us here on Cravings today. It's fabulous insight into the world of Sasha Rundle, and thank you very much for being so honest and giving us an insight and being inspired by vegetables. I really respond to that. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. You're on Joy 94.9. Stick with us all afternoon. After this show, we've got Escape Pod, which is my show, so I should know it. And then we've got Critical Hit, Fender Bender, Cute with Hannah, Neon Lights and A Touch of Pink. We've got a huge afternoon, so stick with us. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.